Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt. And
no Frank.
Oh, no Frank. Yeah,
he's being an old man today.
Yeah,
he's been on a lot of shows lately, even though he says he's a part-time podcaster. But man, anytime he's not on the show, he gets dogged.
He does,
that's what,
man.
We do. He's like, my back hurts and my head or some shit. I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, I've got arthritis and liver spots and stuff. And
yeah, and you know, and so fuck him. He's not here. That's all I have to say. And so how's your week been?
So far, so good, man. I mean, it's, you know, I feel like it's been sunny and breezy, you know, most of the time, even though it's still hot.
Sunny and breezy. It's hot as shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yesterday, I was out working on a transmission or on a tranny, which Frank would probably make a really good joke about.
What?
A tranny. That's what they call it.
Sure, man.
Yeah.
Hey, whatever you do in your spare time.
It's a friend's tranny.
We all are bros, but, you know, hey, you know.
Yeah, we're trying to drop a transmission on an 04 Mustang Cobra in this heat, and it took us 6 hours, and it was...
Whew. Jeez, I might grill some burgers here in a little bit in this heat, and I don't even want to do that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine working on a fucking car.
Yeah, man, that's why I got a sunglass tan, sort of, and my neck
is Mexican,
red.
You're Mexican, man. You don't tan.
I know. I know. I just get
you
red.
You just get dark.
Yeah,
red.
I just get dark. Yeah. My cousin's more Irish than Mexican, because, you know, only one side of his family... is from Mexico, so, you know, he's got more Irish in him and more of that European stuff, and so he doesn't really tan, he burns, and he doesn't, you know, so he's probably feeling it, but yeah, I recover pretty quick from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, this heat is pretty rough. Every time a breeze came by, we were just very grateful, and what little cloud cover we did get here and there, it was cool. But other than that, yeah.
It's just hot.
I would have preferred to be indoors, but I owed him. He's helped me a lot on my car, so I had to go help him with this.
And then you went, like, bachelor partying in Galveston?
I did, yeah. This past...
You survived?
I did. I smoked a cigar.
You went
I
to...
did.
So you went to a bachelor party, a bunch of dudes, no strippers, smoked a cigar. That's very much...
And beer. Beer, and cigar.
That's very much... wiener infested. Phallic. Is that the word for it?
Is that the word?
I don't
phallic.
Know.
And then we ended at Coral Sword the next day. So that was cool.
You're going not back helping to yourself here.
Well, I mean, Coral Sword's cool.
Who does a bachelor party without, you know, that's just me.
Well, I think he did it because he didn't want her to have any. So maybe that's why he was like, because he's been to clubs before.
That's just wrong, man.
And so I think he was just like, you know, you know, the way he spun it is like, I'm not having any, so you're not having any. Maybe they were like, hey, I won't have any if you don't have any.
So basically, you dropped it. You worked on the tranny and went to a dude fest. You had a pretty gay week.
yeah, from that standpoint, yeah, when you put it that way.
See, Frank's not here, so I'll bring the jokes. But ew. My week was okay. I'm on vacation this coming week, so that's good. Because I was about ready to. Possibly punch people or things at work this week.
It was, oh, yeah.
In that kind of week. And, you know, so I can breathe now, as Luke says, just breathe.
I saw that. I saw because we're in that same movie addiction group, and this guy made another horrible list. We see these horrible lists where people just put these god-awful movies first, and maybe a couple good ones, but then ones that should replace the bad ones are further down, and you're like, I'm not going to get into it. I'm frustrated at work, and I do not want to take it
out.
Yeah,
I was ready to rip into that guy. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking idiot. Your movies don't even make sense.
Yeah, there's another guy, and he was like, do it. Just do it. He deserves it. And I'm like, oh, man. This guy's trying to egg on Mark to just dismantle
I was behaved, but didn't do much this week. I forgot to mention the last episode. 2 weeks ago, I took the kids. Well, I had gotten free tickets. I took the kids to Marvel Live, which was... really, really cool. It's you know, people that don't know, Marvel Live is basically like a Disney on Ice thing, only with Marvel characters, where people dressed up and they put on a show, basically, where Loki is trying to get the scepter and take over the world like he does, and
yeah,
and the Avengers and the Guardians and Spider-Man and Iron Fist and all of them have to fight back against him. And it was really, really well done. It's hokey, cheesy, but it's good.
In a good way.
And the excitement was a pure joy in Michael and Wyatt's faces. They were just so amazed. And Michael's 9 years old now, and sometimes he's starting to get bigger and older. But to see that joy in his face, to know he's still a little boy, and it was really neat. Definitely an experience. If it comes to your town and you have the money, I'd recommend going to see it.
Yeah, I was...
It's a little pricey for regular tickets and all the... Man, and they have, like, crack for kids here. They have all these booths that are full of just, like, Marvel stuff, and they want you to buy it, and it's expensive as shit. I think I walked out and spent like 40 more bucks on a couple things for the boys, but it's like you can't not buy something because there's all this stuff that's right there in their faces, and you know.
For me, it was always the snow cone that's in the novelty cup.
So that's what Wyatt got. He got a Captain America cup that had a snow cone.
Nice. That's. I feel like that's what you have to get that.
And now
like,
he
every time.
Drinks his chocolate milk out of his Captain America cup. Nice. And he loves it. So that was a good time, and I just forgot to mention that last week. And so that was neat, taking him to see Marvel Universe live. So before we get into today's movie, which is GoldenEye, but before we get into that, we usually do news briefs at the end, as always, but
yeah.
But sometimes there's big news, and there is big news again this week, and that is that the Disney-Fox merger finally went through. So, you know, a lot's been said about this, like Disney's owning everything, and are they becoming the evil empire, of, so to speak,
yeah.
But and that people, you know, are going to lose their jobs, and you know, we don't know that. Disney might hire a lot of these people back, we don't know. So there's some negative to this, but there's also a lot of positive, and I'm sorry, as a fanboy, big business is big business. I can't always feel bad for those people, but I'm excited as hell that Fantastic Four and X-Men are going to come over to Marvel. A lot of other great franchises are going to get, from Planet of the Apes to Predator to Alien, to television properties like The Simpsons and Family Guy. And Disney has already come out and said that they are open to making R-rated adult films, so I don't think we're going to lose anything with Deadpool or future installments of Logan or whatever they decide to do. And I can't help but look at this as anything but a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I did see something, I don't know if it was true or not, that they were going to keep Ryan Reynolds cast as Deadpool and maybe do away with all the rest of the cast, but I can't see how they go away from Megasonic, Teenage Warhead, and Colossus. And there's, you know, the other details to iron out. But the big thing is, you know, Marvel's kids are coming home. That's it. Yeah, these are children of Marvel Comics, and they're coming home to be with their parent, the parent company.
And I think that's the right way to go. I think X-Men has run its course with Fox and that cast. If there was anyone I'd bring back for the X-Men franchise, maybe McAvoy and Nicholas Holt, because I think they're really good as Professor X and Beast. But otherwise, I'm okay with recasting the rest of the roles. I am looking forward to hopefully finally in a few years sitting down and watching a really great Fantastic Four movie. And, you know, I don't necessarily hate on the ones that were made in the 2000s. They're good family films.
Yeah.
I was watching Rise of the Silver Surfer the other day. The Silver Surfer stuff in it is actually pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, just the rest of the movie is not that great. And so I would love to see a really well-done Fantastic Four movie. And we get freaking Doctor Doom now.
Yeah,
I mean,
man.
You know, Marvel wasn't sure if they had a plan after Thanos. Well, now you do, man. You can lead everything up to the next phase being Doctor Doom and him trying to do his own evil shenanigans on Earth. And
that would be cool how they build up to that.
Yeah.
And it looks like, then you know, this next... It's gonna be more clear how they're gonna go with this after the next Avengers film. What cast we'll get? Are we gonna get like Secret Avengers cast? Are we gonna keep Rhodey? And you know, we're gonna have Hawkeye and these kind of like secondary, you know, superheroes lead the way. It'd be cool to see.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is like just getting all the characters in one spot. Now, if Sony would loosen up a little bit with some of the Spider-Man characters and get more of them over into the, you know, DC. And it seems like Sony's headed that path. And in some ways, I wonder if Venom ultimately fails, then it'll make Sony say, here, let's just let Marvel Studios do all the characters.
Yeah, I would want it to fail for that, but I feel like, you know, it's going to be at least a decent movie, especially with Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
But I foresee, you know, it's a Bond movie today, but I foresee... Tom Hardy going the route of James Bond. I think he should be the name's James
Possibly.
Bond. I agree with the leading actor in this next film. He wants Tom Hardy to be the next James Bond. So,
all right. Well, so that's big news. So we're in a couple. I mean, I'm thinking 21, 22 at the earliest before we get the first movie that might include them because you know, they basically have next year planned out. So it won't be in 2019.
No.
So maybe 2020. Maybe they have enough time to get a post-credit Avengers 4 scene done that maybe introduces somebody.
That would, you know? Dude, if they snuck in Deadpool somehow into Avengers 4, even as an after credit, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, or James McAvoy, or like, I mean, something. That would be...
Something
yeah.
that leads to... It's funny because Now they can retcon it and go back, and they weren't allowed to call Scarlet Witch and Silver Surfer mutants.
Yes.
But now they can.
The twins.
So we'll see where that goes.
Twins, Basil. Twins.
All right, so let's talk download. This is where we tell you what we've downloaded, streamed, and watched lately. What have you watched this past week?
I watched Chappie because it was free with ads on Vudu. And
you had never seen it?
I'd never seen it before. I wanted to see it, and then I was like, oh, it's free. I can see it.
It was on Netflix for quite a while, too.
Yeah, I want to say, like, not this season, but, like, the season past, like, when before they updated, I think Chappie was on there, and I didn't realize that Hugh Jackman was on there, and Sigourney Weaver. It's the robot dialogue is very hilarious to me.
It's a movie that Neil Blomkamp so far has had an interesting career. District 9 was really good.
Yeah.
Elysium was good for the most part. And then Chappie is a really good idea, but ultimately the movie's a mess.
Yeah, a bit of a mess.
It's kind of all over the place. It's a little, it can't decide whether it wants to be a comedy or be serious. It's really bizarre at times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a neat concept. And then he was going to do the Aliens reboot, and they said, Ridley Scott was basically like, no, screw you, man. You're not taking Aliens. I'm doing Prometheus sequels and stuff. And now I guess he's going to reboot RoboCop or RoboCop Returns. So we'll see how that turns out. I think he's a really talented guy and a really visionary director, but he just hasn't seemed to be given that big break yet. And maybe RoboCop Returns will be that big break.
Whenever he's like, oh, you don't have to shoot anybody. Just put the knife in them that go to sleep. And he's like, oh, go to sleep. And he's like, and then they start giving him ninja weapons, and he's like, I'm like, freaking ninja robot. Why did I not see this before? But, I mean, he doesn't stay that way the whole time. But, yeah, very interesting film. A little bit of a mess. Entertaining.
Yeah.
But, let's see how that RoboCop movie goes. Maybe they teach RoboCop to walk like a gangster, like Chappie. And it's another fun, hot mess.
Is there anything else?
That's really it. And then I bought GoldenEye. I didn't realize that I didn't have it at all. So I bought GoldenEye digitally. I know. That's blasphemy on your part.
Hoping to pay too much for it.
$10.
Could have probably got it off Amazon for like $5.
Yeah, probably could have. Even on Blu-ray, probably could have gotten that same Blu-ray for $5.
But I
agree.
Know, you're always impatient. You don't tend to shop around.
I am, man.
You always first grab, you buy something.
Itchy trigger finger.
I watched, we were in a game night last night, which was actually pretty funny. I'm real picky when it comes to comedies. It's like a comedy action movie, and it was actually pretty well done. Rachel McAdams looking very hot in it and doing her thing. And,
always.
And Jason Bateman and Kyle Chandler's in it, and it was a pretty funny movie. Then we tried to watch the Amazon movie, You Were Never Really Here, with Joaquin Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the hell it was about. Neither did Mary. It was weird. It was bizarre. It was just not my thing.
Is it kind of like 8mm bizarre?
Not even that bizarre. Yeah. This was just like, I don't know. I guess he had extreme PTSD, and he was like a guy that would go help find missing children, but yet I couldn't tell like if he was killing the children. Like, I'm not sure what was really going on, because at the beginning of the movie, he, like, was cleaning up, like, looked like he killed someone.
Oh, yeah, this is, like, the one that's kind of like Dexter, quote-unquote. Yeah. Yeah.
It's bizarre. We didn't make it through. We turned it off. It was just too weird.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm not into this. So I don't really know what happened, because I wasn't sure what was going on anyways. I drank a little wine, too, so I was, like, feeling kind of tipsy. And so I'm not sure. That was a bizarre movie. Other than that, did I watch anything else this week? That's it, I think. That's really all I've watched.
Okay.
So, man, we're slacking our download this lately.
Yeah,
we
are.
Bring more to the people. I need to watch. I'm on vacation this week, so I'm sure I'll watch some stuff this
week.
Heck yeah. For sure. So let's get into 2005's GoldenEye. It's the first James Bond movie we've done. We've been talking about doing a Bond film, and, you know, there's plenty to choose from. What, 24 Bond films?
Yes.
Everyone has their favorite James Bond, their favorite Bond movie, their favorite Bond moment. And you couldn't, I won't say you couldn't go wrong with picking any of the 24 movies or however many there are, but you could go wrong. There's a few Bond movies that aren't so good. But GoldenEye is definitely up there with amongst the better Bond films. Watching it, I hadn't watched it in years, watching it this week to get ready for the show, I realized it maybe doesn't hold up as well as some of the other older movies we've done.
For sure.
And it's not because it's not a good movie or the action, it's more like the times we live in. Now,
yeah.
You see the what's the word, the male chauvinists have bond a lot more than you ever did now.
And the, and they, and M directly refers to it, you know, you're a relic of the Cold War.
Yeah.
You know.
But you see the cheesiness of it some.
Yeah.
You see the Pierce Brosnan posing for a lot of scenes. He's, it's more like, how good can I look than can I act?
Yes.
And you notice that now. But overall, it's a pretty solid Bond movie. And I remember seeing this in theaters and walking out of it going, that's pretty cool. Because I kind of had grown up with... I didn't really grow up with Sean Connery because he was before I was born. I grew up more with Roger Moore.
Timothy
and then
Dalton.
The Timothy Dalton films. And Pierce kind of brought a new edge to Bond. And Martin Campbell as a director definitely upped the action, I remember.
Oh, absolutely.
It.
He gets Bond.
So... Your first experience with GoldenEye?
My first experience, I think this one
not
I did
first
see.
Experience.
Yeah, I know. I want to say that I did not see this in theaters, but I did see it when it came out on VHS, and my parents bought it, and I got to watch it because it is not rated R. So I got to watch that one, and of course the game that you know, infamous GoldenEye on N64. Right. That everyone and their mama played. And if they haven't, you should probably go buy a retro system and play it because it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
Well, and you can get it on the 360 and stuff, the reloaded version, so you can't get it on a semi-newer system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was awesome. The action shots are great. It starts off with, you know, him jumping off a dam. That's a great picture. And just the chase scene with him on the motorcycle at the end, jumping into the plane. I mean, that's... You know, that's enough to excite, you know, a 10-year-old.
And the tank chase.
Yeah, and the tank chase, yes. Just going through everything. Yeah. You know, they had to borrow that one from the London Army, I want to say. I think they borrowed it from their museum, actually. And they had to retrofit it so that it could actually drive how they wanted it to. And then they gave it back to the museum, and now it sits and it pays homage to GoldenEye. It has like little notes in there that you know was used in that film.
And I think for me, GoldenEye was the first because it was 95, so I was 18. I think this was the first Bond movie that I watched as an adult. You know, I was in high school those years and I had seen Bond, but this is like the first time I was a grown up watching a Bond movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I started looking at Bond a little differently. Like in the past, I might have paid attention to it as a film I'd watch with my dad, but it was like that was my dad's movie, you know, James Bond. I think GoldenEye is really the movie that made me a bigger Bond fan, and today I love Bond. I try not to miss the movies when they come out in theaters, and he's become one of my favorite franchises. But GoldenEye is a really solid movie, and to sum it up, it's basically the Russians, is after the Cold War, a Russian general wants to steal a weapon called GoldenEye, which is like a nuclear electronic device.
Yeah, it blasts EMPs from space.
And at the beginning of the film, Sean Bean is in it with him, and he plays 006. And he believes Sean Bean to be killed, but he comes back because it turns out he's actually working with the Russians to steal GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Sean
Bean's character just hates everything that the London Embassy did for him as a 006 agent. Because they screwed over his parents. I forget what the tied him to his parents. But basically, his parents were screwed over by the same government. And he tells Bond he hates him. He hates M. He hates Moneypenny. And just hates everything. And he turns on, joins the Russians.
And that concept alone made for an exciting idea for a Bond film. To see a 00 versus a 00. I remember when this was coming out. Like, that idea alone is just... It's brilliant in so many ways. And that's what makes this film, I think, work on so many levels, is that this is personal to Bond. And Bond has had personal adventures in the past, going back to From Russia with Love and other Bond films. But they modernized this in a way where Bond really, you know, struggled. Is it that simple just to kill him because he's my enemy now? You know, and there's even a conversation he has with the female in it, Natalia.
Natalia.
It's not as easy as that, you know, because it's someone that was my partner and I worked with, and it shows the human side of Bond that he is an assassin, he has a license to kill, but he also has to deal with consequences of the things he does.
Yeah, and that's one good thing about these films that, you know, sometimes you saw a lot of in the Roger Moore film, you know, they're, you know, precariously known as a, you know, movies that have bad guys stroking cats, stroking Mr. Bigglesworth, this one, everyone's human. The bad guy's a human. The Bond girl is a human. In fact, there's, you know, the romance scene between them really isn't what it is in other Bond films, because this is a very strong female lead. She can think for herself. She's smart. She's independent. She's tough. We talk about Wonder Woman being the first strong female leads, but in all these movies that we bring up, there's big examples of good female leads and good female characters, strong females in these roles. And Natalia is a good example of this.
She's played by Isabella Scorupco, I think it's how you say her
last name. I've seen her in some other
films. She's been a lot of stuff, and you're right, and that she's very good in this. She is a damsel in distress at times, but she's also a strong female lead. Mm-hmm. And I remember when GoldenEye came out, it still has that Bond making his innuendos and his being a male pig, but it also was the first time he was given a couple of females in a movie that really were able to stand their own against him, too.
Yeah.
Because every time he makes an innuendo, she has something to say back to him. They actually finally wrote the females with witty dialogue to say back to him.
Even Moneypenny. Yeah.
Yeah, she's excellent. And Judi Dench is the first time we see her as him. And she is super strong. She doesn't put up with any shit.
Big time.
Bond.
Yeah, and what's funny is during this time, people were against a female M. You know, this was her first role as M, just as it was Pierce Brosnan's first role as James Bond. But then whenever they saw her, you know, I don't care if it's a situation where you would die, I will send you in. I don't care if you're some pretty boy, you know, whatever. And she just laid down the law, and they're like, okay, she can play M. That is a good performance.
It had a very young Alan Cumming in it as Boris, way before he played Nightcrawler in X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm.
Character actor Joe Don Baker, who plays like his American contact and Conscious, works for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
And Desmond Llewellyn as Q, you know, and he went on to play Q a few more years after this.
Before he
died, and he has a really great moment in this with the pin and all that.
Yes.
And just classic Q moments. And that's a great thing about this Bond movie, too. I realized watching it again that it does a good job of giving all the characters their moment. It's not just focused on Bond. Like a lot of the Connery films, it's like if Connery's not on the screen, the other characters don't get a lot of time.
Yeah.
A lot had to do with Sean Connery's stardom and his contracts and stuff. Like, I'm the star, I'm going to be on the screen.
Yeah.
And Pierce Brosnan was allowed to make a Bond film that shares it with the other characters. You never felt like if Bond wasn't on screen, you weren't enjoying the movie. You're not waiting for Bond to come back on screen. And Martin Campbell does a really good job of that in this movie. And he does it again 10 years later in Casino Royale. Martin Campbell is one of those guys that really does understand Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And this film does a good job of that, of giving all the characters display, strong female leads. And we haven't even talked about Famke Janssen as on the top. She's batshit freaking crazy in this movie.
Oh, yeah, dude.
This, again, another X-Men actor would go on to play Jean Grey. She looks completely different, a little bit heavier in this movie because they wanted her to be muscular, I guess, before she played Jean Grey.
Probably did some weights.
She plays a role with an accent, and she kicks ass and is, like, pretty evil bitch, so to say, right?
she really is. In fact, whenever she first read the script of how this character killed her victims, she nearly had a heart attack. That was the quote from one of the set directors. She nearly had a heart attack when she read this script. Like, what? She kills them how? And I'm like, that's kind of hot, actually.
and she really, you know, Bond now with the Daniel Craig's films are very serious. You know, they have their moments where Craig will crack jokes, but Pierce Brosnan's Bond. Yes, Martin Campbell brought this into the 90s, and it's a very 90s Bond film, but it also still has some of the 70s and 80s ham jokes in it, like Bond has. And Famke Janssen really hams it up. She's a quack job. She's really having a lot of fun with the role. She's a little crazy. It's a little silly at times, but she absolutely owns it, and it almost feels like Martin Campbell told her to take this character and be as batshit crazy as you want with it.
Well, yeah, he really encouraged a lot. I mean, in that spa scene, whenever Pierce is fighting Famke's character Xena, which is Xenia, which is named after Xena. That's how he named her after. And he's like, slam her as hard as you can against the wall. Don't worry, they're padded. And I guess they weren't padded enough because he broke some of her ribs whenever he smacked her against the wall. And I was like, man, talk about, like, yeah, acting. I mean, they're really putting it all in there. So you can really tell from this film.
Yeah, she does a good job. And this is a very young Sean Bean playing Alec 006, way before he was in Lord of the Rings or being known for dying in every movie. And he's really a good, strong counterpart to James's 007 because he's just as lethal. He's trained the same ways. He's just as smart, just as lethal. He has a plan. He believes it's going to work, and it does almost work. This movie does fall on another one of the classic Bond tropes where the bad guy always has Bond on the ropes and could easily just shoot him, but yet he wants to talk and leave him alive. And that's just Bond. There's not a Bond film out there over the 20-something films that the bad guy doesn't have Bond where he could kill him at one moment, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the dialogue between Alec and James is so strong and good that you want to see these guys go at it. And props to Sean Bean for this I remember may have jump started him. I can't remember what Sean may have done before this.
I know he tried to get
auditioned for the role of James Bond.
Yeah, but they opted for Timothy Dalton at the time. I think he wanted to success Roger Moore, but succeed Roger Moore, but it ended up being Timothy Dalton. Which Timothy Dalton, they expected him to do this film, but he said that he was too old. Yeah. That was at first they said he turned it down because he said he was too old, which I don't think he was.
Well, and ultimately, License to Kill was probably the least profitable Bond movie they ever made. It was a dud at the box office because it's arguably the worst Bond movie.
Yeah,
and I don't think the studio really wanted him back after that because Dalton apparently was really hard to work with. Like Living Daylights, there was a lot of problems on set, a lot of things, and that he just was not real. Wasn't a director-friendly actor. And I'm not so sure the producers, MGM and stuff, really wanted him back. But I think contractually, I think they had to offer him the role.
Okay, that makes sense.
If I remember right.
Because, I mean, I was like, you know, if he said that he was too old in that film, I mean, then whenever freaking Sean Connery came back for what? Thunderball or Goldfinger? Where he played the aging 007?
Well, that was the one that was the unofficial Bond film.
Oh, okay.
Where he came back. It's the year there were two Bond films, one Roger Moore and one on Connery.
Yeah.
And one was, like, unofficial. Yeah, because he was aging.
And both of those films, they use the same car that is in this film, the Aston Martin D25. Right. All three of those films starred the same vehicle, which I thought was cool because...
But then he also gets a new vehicle with the BMW.
And he gets the new one, which he doesn't even use, man.
I know.
It made me want a Z3 Roadster so bad. They stopped making them in 2003, and I was going to get one. Whenever my little Mazda stopped working, I found one for like $5,000. But my dad's like, no, you know how much a friggin' brake changes on that thing? He's like, don't expect to do it yourself because it's German. Which this is one of the first German cars that we ever saw as a Bond vehicle. Which we would continue to see in the other Pierce Brosnan films. Another Day, Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough.
That's cool. He only made four, right? Yeah.
Four, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and the Bronson Bonds were all pretty entertaining. They got a little cheesier. By the time they got to Die Another Day, it was a little little cheesy at that point. But I remember
that Halle Berry?
Yeah.
With the laser and the...
Yeah, it got a little cheesy at that point.
Yep.
But overall, Bronson's Bond films were fairly entertaining. And I find something I liked in each one of his movies. Denise Richards being in the role Is Not Enough probably was a bad choice because she was a terrible actress, but she's hot.
Yeah, good looks. I mean, the looks were there. But and then there was a second Bond girl in that one, the Asian lady, or was she?
No, World Is Not Enough is the girl from Braveheart.
Oh, so
Sophia Loren or so, I can't remember her last name.
Yeah,
but yeah, she was Braveheart. Good. Yeah. And but you know, GoldenEye though is obviously out of the Pierce Bronson films, it's the best one.
Yeah,
they did go downhill a little bit from there with Bronson, and Martin Campbell did such a good job that he was able to come back and reboot Bond for Casino Royale in 2005. And this is a really solid Bond film overall. And I want to talk about some of the action sequences in it. A lot of the Bond action movies over the years have consisted of mostly fist fights and little brawls, and maybe a car chase here and there. Then a big action sequence at the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie. That was the Bond formula.
Yeah.
This might have been one of the first Bond movies that had a lot of action throughout it. It had a huge opening sequence with the dam.
Yeah.
It has the tank chase right in the middle of the scene. Mm-hmm. Then it has the big fight on the satellite at the end. And this was very much a big spectacle of a Bond film. And it's because MGM put a lot of money into this because this was their first Bond reboot with Pierce Brosnan. And they wanted it to be a success. And it works. And it ultimately was a success. This was a highly successful film at the box office.
Yeah, it cost $60 million. And then I think it grossed over $100 million. Yeah. So, yeah, solid movie.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I had the... Man, a lot of... a lot of cool gadgets that we didn't really get to see except for the pen, which I thought was interesting because he says the writing's on the wall after he throws the pen, which is the name of the Spectre opening theme, writing's on the wall. And I was like, did that foreshadow the opening
Bond song? Has tons of throwbacks throughout the series.
Yeah. So that would be cool. Spectre, you know, a throwback to GoldenEye.
Yeah. And what a neat thing about this movie, too, is it was the first original Bond film that wasn't based on one of Ian's novels. Because they had, if I remember, there's only one novel left, and they weren't ready to adapt that yet. I think that was Tomorrow Never Dies was the last novel.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was the first original Bond film. And that was a risky move, because they had relied on the source material all these years. We have these novels to base the movies on. And for the first time, they took a chance on a brand new script that they didn't have a formula for.
Yeah, in fact, they named it after Ian's beach house.
Right.
They called this beach house GoldenEye. And so I was like, okay, what do we have to work with? Well, we have a cool name from this guy's beach house. And it was, what else do we got? It was cool because the Soviet Union had just, you know, collapsed and was just fallen. And so they were actually able to film a little bit in Russia. Mm-hmm. Just a little bit, not a lot. The director was even one of the bicyclists at the beginning. He gets knocked over. And the Ferrari is really cool. The Ferrari scene's really cool. And in fact, she drove a lot of those stunts herself. She did an interview with Jay Leno that year, whenever Jay Leno was still on The Tonight Show. And she talked about the stunt scene she had to do. And I always think that's really cool whenever the actors can do their own stunts. It's cool to find out someone can drive like a she-devil. what else about this film?
Well, Pierce almost became Bond after Roger Moore retired.
Really?
To make the Living Daylights, but he could not do it because his contract to Remington Steele, they would not. Now actors can do television and movies. They let them out of their contracts. Back then, he was contracted to television. They wouldn't allow him to be out of it. And Timothy Dalton had originally turned down Living Daylights, but when they couldn't get Pierce, they got Dalton back.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pierce, of course, years later, was able to get the role. So this was his first time. And, so he had been... And I remember that being in the news back when I was younger, that Pierce Brosnan had been wanting to be James Bond for years. He was a lot of people's first choice. A lot of people wanted Pierce as Bond, as fans anyway. I don't know how much the studio did, because I think they were looking at other actors and stuff. But there was someone else I read that almost got this role. Who was it I read?
I don't think he had a huge career, though. I know who you're talking about. I do think it's funny that Roger Moore's child, his oldest kid, was a assistant camera director on this film, and he came to go visit him just to go check out the set, and he made a joke to Pierce saying that, oh, someone said his acting was so bad they had to bring Roger Moore out of retirement and finish the film.
And Ralph Fiennes did audition for Bond.
Ralph Fiennes.
And he didn't get it, but he went on to play M at the end of Skyfall years later.
In 2012, right?
Let's talk about that, the acting in Bond. You know, Bond, to me, is right up there with Star Wars. It's not always going to be known for great acting. It's known for its storytelling and for these characters that are become immortal through film.
Yeah.
And Pierce is okay in this. He hams it up a little bit, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly scenes where he's smirking at the women and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, it's cheesy. But that's his job as Bond. Bond is a bit, until we got Daniel Craig's Bond was kind of he's a lethal, brutal assassin, but he's also a charming, sarcastic kind of cheeseball.
He really is.
And Pierce does that. And Sean Connery cheesed it up, too, in his role. And Roger Moore, certainly. He made some of the goofiest Bond movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Pierce, I think, brings that good mix of all those elements of Bond to it. Where now, with Daniel Craig, he's the more serious Bond.
Yeah.
He can be sly and slick, Craig, and he can smirk at the girl and get her to be in bed with him. But Craig's not going to make the little one-liners as often, even though they have added some of that into Craig's Bond.
And this was the last Bond. So, you know, Martin Campbell, you know, this was the last Bond, the first Bond film that was filmed before Austin Powers came out. And then an Austin Powers film came out every single year. A James Bond film came out, except for Martin Campbell's next film, Casino Royale, with Daniel Craig. It ended there, which I thought was funny. Pierce Brosnan hates Austin Powers movies because he feels like it ruined Bond for him, and that's why.
Right.
Like, maybe they didn't do so well because of Austin Powers. And I was like, Austin Powers is, it's a mix of the Pierce Brosnan films for sure, but it's definitely a lot of the Roger Moore stuff.
And the Connerys. And yeah, there's some and Connery throwbacks to Austin Powers movies.
Yeah.
But overall, though, GoldenEye is a solid movie, and I really enjoyed rewatching it. You know, the biggest thing, as I said earlier, you really see now the way he treats women at times. It's yeah. really kind of like, it's borderline inappropriate nowadays, but at the times these were made, a lot of the Bond films were made in the swinging 60s, mm-hmm. where women were looked like that, and over the years, they never changed the way Bond was, because it was acceptable in society to yeah. talk to women like that. It doesn't make it right, yeah. you know, and Bond still does it to an extent, but they have modernized Bond more.
Yeah.
Now you go watch a Daniel Craig film, it's not as much about the Bond women anymore. It seems to be about really great villains lately with Christoph Waltz and Javier Bardem. Mm-hmm. It seems to be more a focus on that, and the women are there, but they seem like they're getting treated better. And when we get Danny Boyle's Bond film next year, we'll see how he treats the women. But does Bond get a pass because of the history of the character? And people accept that, you know, Bond's going to be this guy who's going to sleep with women. But he gets that pass, but yet writers have to find a way to write the dialogue better so it doesn't come across as like they're just objects.
Yeah.
But yet he gets a pass because he's trying to sleep with them. You know.
That makes sense. And yeah, man, the Craig Bond, a lot different than the Pierce Brosnan Bond, just made me think. It's like he's the tough Bond.
Yeah.
And I like how they set the tone a little different. He didn't ask for a martini shaken or stirred. He's just like, I don't care.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed, though, that Spectre wasn't better. I like Spectre, but
yeah.
it's a little boring in parts. Spectre's not as good as Skyfall. Hopefully they rebound with...
Same kind of action, though.
Yeah.
Because I feel
same
like...
Same director.
The action, yeah, same director, so it's going to have the same action in which, you know, both for GoldenEye and, you know, Casino Royale... you always feel like the action sequences aren't like character friendly. Like right. you don't know if this character is going to survive this action yeah. sequence because it's so real.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't know if Pierce Brosnan was going to die in that chopper or not.
Right.
You didn't know if he was going to make it into that plane and pull up. Casino Royale. You didn't know if Daniel Craig was going to live after he tried to veer off from running over Vesper.
Yeah.
And
one thing I do enjoy about the newer Bond is there's a continuity to him from Casino Royale all the way through Spectre, that the Spectre organization has been there this whole time since Casino Royale and caused the death of Vespa and all that, you know, and I like the fact they tied them together.
Yeah.
The Connery films were loosely tied together through Spectre, but they weren't like direct sequels, and it's nice to see a continuity in the Bond films now.
Yeah.
And, you know, Craig, this will probably be his last one. But Bond is a character that I think will always be there. Long after you and I have gone on from this world, they will be making Bond films. And that's the great thing about him. He's a character that's become immortal through film and through recasting. And the thing that I've always argued with people is why they should recast Indiana Jones, because he's such a great character. He deserves to live on.
Yeah.
Not keep him making movies with an 80-year-old Harrison Ford. And Bond, to me, is that tentpole or template as how to do this, is to make a character immortal and keep making films. No different than the new Star Trek movies we're getting and other iconic characters that deserve to keep having films made.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Star Trek, if we do, like, if they immortalize it, kind of like they did, Spock and the crew of the Enterprise, do they bring James McAvoy to replace Henry Picard? Or, Picard? And if they make Star Trek with Picard, where Picard comes back in time.
In the new timeline.
Yeah. in the new there. Timeline. So,
but there's been some great Bond moments. You mentioned a few of them. Did you have any great Bond moments you remember over the years?
I
wrote down a few, but, you know.
I think it's Tomorrow Never Dies, where he has the inflatable tires. Oh, where they keep shooting out his tires and they keep reflating.
Kind of cheesy, but cool.
Yeah, cheesy. I always liked...
As a young kid, though, I can see how you're impressed by that.
Yeah, and that I guess that's, you know, why I'm a little biased with the Brosnan films, because I thought the gadgets were so cool.
Yeah.
Just overall. And then one of the villains that I always remember, I think, is from... it might be from The World Is Not Enough, where he can't feel anything. And... He grabs this like magma rock and he's like, I can't feel this.
Yeah.
And he puts it in this guy's hand and he just holds it. And the guy's like, ah. But I mean, it's a weak villain. A guy right. that just can't feel any pain.
Yeah.
But,
And that is one thing the Craig films lack is the gadgets, but they're slowly bringing them back in. They introduced a new Q in the Craig films.
I think it's good that they're kind of gadget light. You know, it makes it more realistic.
Yeah. I have a few. I have the tank chase on GoldenEye. I think it's still one of the cool sequences.
Absolutely.
The free running scene at the beginning of Casino Royale,
which
immediately in the first 15 minutes of this movie, it tells you this is a different Bond.
Yeah.
This is not a middle aged Bond. This Bond is fast, can kick ass, he can chase this guy. And immediately, Martin Campbell, who rebooted Bond with GoldenEye with this amazing scene on the dam, gives us another amazing scene in Casino Royale and says, hey, this is a new Bond. You know, and he's quick, he's blonde haired, he looks a little different.
Yep.
And he isn't afraid to detonate the explosion in the middle of the courtyard, even though he shouldn't. And immediately you're like, wow, this is a new Bond. Did you have another one?
Yeah, I would have to say the chase scene as well. I'd also have to say what was that boat scene? It was that boat scene from Tomorrow Never Dies.
One of the Bronson films, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been the Denise Richards one.
Yeah.
Casino Royale. I really like the poker part. The chef.
It gives it intensity. It's the most intense poker scene ever filmed.
More intense than. No, not the Austin Powers poker scene.
And then the last moment I have is one of the most famous moments and one of the most famous quotes, and it's the laser scene in Goldfinger where he's like, "You expect me to talk? No, I expect you to die, Mr. Bond.
I expect you to die."
And it's just iconic. It defines Bond in every sense of the word right there. Great villains, great hero. The villain could kill the hero, but he doesn't.
Yeah.
And Bond survives. You know. Any final thoughts on GoldenEye or Bond moments?
No, I mean, I wish they would have done more with Jaws, I guess. I felt like Jaws could have been a recurring villain if needed.
And he did appear in a couple, two or three movies,
two
if I remember right?
Yeah. But, man. So, From Russia with Love is probably the best Bond film, probably.
I would say Skyfall is the best, and I would put Russia with Love second.
And probably
From Russia with Love was third. From Russia with Love was the best until Skyfall came out, and I think Skyfall is arguably the... I mean,
definitely a good looking film.
Skyfall is not just a great Bond film; it's a great film overall. Yeah. It's like just because I know people that aren't Bond film fans that saw Skyfall and were like, "Wow, this is like really, really good film."
Yeah,
and From Russia with Love is definitely a second, I think, for sure.
I want to say Casino Royale is up there. I think GoldenEye is more like maybe top 10.
Yeah,
maybe 11, 12, somewhere in there. Not like, you know, maybe a little further up from the middle, but you know, of course. The bad ones are like, you know, the world is not enough. It's not that great. You talk about tomato meter. A lot of Bond's films after this go down and rating. And you
I like the Craig films. Like Quantum of Solace wasn't great, but I actually like that movie. Yeah, I
like Quantum of Solace.
It's got some good action sequences in it.
It did tie in to Casino Royale.
It starts off right where Casino Royale left out. The end of it where he says, "I'm Bond, I'm James Bond." It immediately has him in the car going after that guy. So it takes place right after. So, but Bond as a character will be here forever. I'm sure we'll cover more Bond films on the show and talk different aspects of James Bond because he's just a character that is iconic as Luke Skywalker or Batman or any other of these characters that we love talking about.
Yeah.
And then GoldenEye is a really, really good, solid film. One of the better Bond films. I would maybe put it in the top 10 if I was making a full list over the years. So that's all we've got on GoldenEye, but we've got some things to talk about before we leave, as we always do. Last week we recorded, we were in the midst of Comic-Con, and we weren't able to get all the news in because things were still happening while we were sitting here recording.
Yes.
And we got some new trailers this past week, and let's start with the trailers. Shazam.
Shazam.
Man, I'm not hyped about this, man. I just think it looks kind of stupid. I get... You guys were texting me. Oh, you don't like Frank's. It's a 13-year-old and a superhero's body. I get that. I know who Shazam is. I've been reading comics my whole life. This movie just didn't do any. This trailer didn't do anything for me. It just didn't excite me.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll see it, but I just thought it looked really stupid.
If it turns out to be kind of like an Ant-Man or a Thor Ragnarok, would that make
I'm not a huge fan of Ant-Man, but if it's at least that good as a Marvel film.
Yeah.
Because Ant-Man, when I saw the trailer for Ant-Man, I never not wanted to go see it.
Yeah.
I just walked out of the theater thinking, oh, that was okay.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see Ant-Man. This doesn't even really make me excited to see it. It just doesn't look good to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
I think they cheesed out the special effects aspect of it, where the lightning strikes and he just immediately turns into Shazam. You know, it's like...
That's fair.
I guess, like, I want to see him, like, do the thing where the kid goes, ah, and he grows into Shazamio, but I don't know. That's just me.
Maybe it's just a trailer. Maybe they'll show that in the beginning. Because they have to do, like, an epic transformation at first, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, like, whenever Iron Man first became Iron Man, he's like, everything's being put on, and now everything's just ka-ching, right on.
Right. And then, you know, and the character of Billy Bastian, he's an interesting character, but I feel like he is like an Ant-Man type character that he should have maybe been introduced as a side character in one of the DC films and then branch him off into his own. Mm-hmm. You also, anytime you're casting children, if the movie is highly successful, you're doing sequels, the young Billy Bastian is going to end up getting too old to play the role. So, you know, it's always an interesting concept when these things happen. So we'll see. Now, a trailer I really did like was the Aquaman trailer. And I rewatched it last night because I realized I'd watched it a couple times but didn't really take it in. And man, this movie looks cool as shit. I mean, this hopefully rights the ship for DC, and I know we've said that before with DC films, and Wonder Woman was really good, you know.
Yeah.
And Justice League was a step back again in some ways, but man, I hope Aquaman kicks a lot of ass. I mean, it's got sharks with guns, dude. I mean, that alone, Black Mantis looks fucking incredible.
Yeah.
That scene, as a fan of comic books, made me go, whoa. You know, I don't usually do that very often with trailers, but I'm like, wow, a live-action Black Mantis, that is freaking cool.
Black Mantis is a cool villain. He's a very good adversary, and it looks like, just from the visuals, it looks like they have him right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe this is the beginning to Legion of Doom. Maybe we can get...
Absolutely. Yeah. That would be awesome.
Dude, that would be cool. I just thought about that. I'm like, we're thinking about Justice League. What about the Legion of Doom? I was like, you know, Marvel doesn't have a Legion of Doom. Maybe that's something that that DC can go and really do their own thing and make it their own. Yeah. That would be cool to see.
I mean, it looks great. I'm excited to see it. That definitely will be the Christmas movie this year for me to go see.
Absolutely.
So looking forward to it. The last trailer they released at Comic-Con was Godzilla King of the Monsters. And I enjoyed the first Godzilla from a few years ago, which was directed by Gareth Edwards, you know, went on to do Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this looks cool. You know, it looks like a lot of cool monsters in it. And I know the trailer was really well received. A lot of people liked it. I just hope there's a lot more Godzilla in it. That was my biggest beef with the Godzilla from 2015 was like...
Saw his foot.
See his foot.
Yeah.
And it takes 45 minutes to see that. And he disappears again for another 20 minutes. And you get like some really dark action scenes at the end of the movie that it's over. So let's have a little more Godzilla in this movie, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yes, I agree. No more Godzilla. They definitely need to have much more than the last film.
And
much more.
The last trailer, which wasn't released at Comic-Con, came out Monday. It was the new trailer for Alita Battle Angel.
Yeah.
And, you know, did I say that right, Alita? Yeah. The first trailer didn't sell me on this, but this trailer it's pretty good, people.
Yeah the action looks neat.
Yeah, and just the fact that it looks like a live-action anime, much more than Ghost in the Shell did.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by Robert Rodriguez, who did Sin City, and produced by James Cameron, who's been trying to make this movie for years. And this is a pretty cool-looking film. And did you watch the trailer?
I did. And at first I thought it was an animated movie, and then I was like, wait, there's actual people in it. And then I'm like, okay, they're just, you know, it's like a half-action, live-action, half-anime.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to watch this trailer.
Just watch it, see what happens.
Yeah, and it looks really cool. I think you know, it's like like you said, like maybe a better Ghost in the Shell.
Right.
So
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll
see. I know Cameron's been trying to make the movie for years. It's possibly planned as a trilogy, but they're designing it as a standalone in case it's not successful.
Yeah.
So we'll see. The last bit of news we have is they announced the cast for Star Wars Episode 9. And some exciting names on there, as we see. They announced after Carrie Fisher died, you know, they said, we're not going to put her in the film. We're going to not use CGI or something. And I guess they sat down and talked with her daughter and her family, and they are going to find a way to use unused footage from The Force Awakens to put her in the film. And people say, well, how do you do this? Well, nowadays with CGI and stuff, you can change the backgrounds. They can do amazing thing with post-sound work. I don't know how they'll get it to match her mouth and what she says, but I would imagine it's still going to be a very small part. But I think this might be the proper way to do it instead of just right. You feel like if you had killed her in The Last Jedi... after she died, you feel like that was a disservice. You feel like if you write her off in the story, that's a disservice. And I really believe that J.J. Abrams is not going to do this unless he knows he can do it right. Do you agree?
I agree. And I heard Mark Hamill say after she died that the first film was mainly about Han, The second was about, you know, Mark Hamill, and the last film was supposed to be Carrie, supposed to be, you know, more about Leia, and hopefully they're able to make that happen.
Right.
You know, like you know, this reminds me of, you know, last issue we had, you know, with an actor dying while the movie wasn't finished, and that's Paul Walker. I think they did a good job having him go off, and hopefully it's something in a Star Wars way.
You just compared to Fast Furious to Star Wars.
I
get out of
the
here.
The moment.
But and they also announced Mark Hamill's coming back.
Yes.
Which I'm not as surprised by that because no one's ever really gone, as Luke says. You know, you had a feeling that he was going to come back in some way, probably as a Force ghost, because Rey still needs guidance. She still needs help.
Yeah.
So that was not as surprising. Billy Dee Williams officially coming back as Lando. That's exciting. I hope he's healthy and in good shape and is ready to do this. And because I really want a really good Lando moment in this film, and I hope JJ gives it to him. So that was good news. And it starts filming August 1st this week, man. They start filming episode 9.
Man.
We're about 18 months away to see how this all ends. And no negativity at all here, because you and I like The Last Jedi. I think we get what Rian Johnson was trying to do, and we understand. And I think J.J. Abrams is going to come back around full circle and bring us a satisfying conclusion to this new trilogy.
I think so, too.
And I'm literally looking forward to it. To me, more Star Wars, the better. Keep it coming, people. I'm okay with it. Keep Star Wars coming every year, as far as I'm concerned. So, before we get out of this, preview our next film. And we are going to stay in the action category here. And we are going to go do a film that heavily influenced me and my love for action films. And we're going to go back and we're going to do John Woo's Hard Boiled.
Streets where violence consumes everything it touches and the innocent live in fear. Two men dedicated to justice will follow different paths as one searches for revenge and the other for redemption. Fate will bring them together. Now, for those who hide behind the shadow of corruption, only one thing is certain: a day of reckoning is coming. From the director of The Killer and Mission Impossible 2. Greatest action movies ever made. Hard Boiled 2-Disc Ultimate Edition. Look for it on DVD exclusively from Dragon Dynasty.
And this is a movie that was covered by our friends at Matinee Heroes back in one of the early episodes. And I went back and watched it after they did it. And I still love this film so much. And I'm looking forward to watching it this week. And have you seen Hardboiled?
I have not seen Hardboiled.
You've seen Woo films. And this is going to be an experience for you, man. Let me tell you. Sit down, get you a little beer or something, some popcorn, and just take this movie in. And take in the genius that John Woo is as an action director with just wire work and gunplay. No special effects, nothing fancy. Just his action films are like a ballet in some way. Just beautifully shot and just a good film. Arguably one of his best films. Some people like The Killer better. And I really enjoy The Killer too, but I think I like Hardboiled a little bit better. The hospital scene alone is worth the time. You're going to enjoy watching this film, man.
Sweet.
So, I'm going to let you borrow my DVD copy so you don't have to rent it.
Oh, cool.
So, Hard Boiled next week on the show. Looking forward to bringing that to you. So, go and watch John Woo's Hard Boiled so you can get ready for this show. So, that should be a fun one. Anything else before we get out here? Oh, Thorskin, Alex, Jimmy.
Yes.
We hope we did you proper. Bring you some Pierce Bronson love, man. Yeah, we know, man. He's a friend of y'all's. So some love to you guys, and I'm glad y'all survived, or at least Alex survived the prison.
Yes.
Show. Listen to those guys at Thorskin Podcast, man. Really good show. Guys from England. They're like our counterparts.
And, they really are.
And so we hope we did their loyal Sir Pierce Bronson good service today. Yes,
Sir Pierce Bronson.
And a shout out, as always, to Miguel from Critical Thinking and all those guys over there. I know they've been having some family issues, so a shout out to them to take care of all the things those guys got going on their show.
Yeah.
And to Kyle at Tokyo Munchies, always brother, for retweeting and posting and Instagramming and all that. And for people that don't, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Pod. We're almost to 400 followers, man.
Yes.
Maybe by the time this episode plays, we will be. We want to get there. And follow us on Instagram at the Rebel Radio Podcast, Facebook, and go to therebelradiopodcast.com for all episodes. Buy a t-shirt, donate some money, it helps us out. And watch Comics with Arnold. Really, really funny stuff that we have on our YouTube channel. We usually do about an episode every week. And the latest one, you got Arnold reading. Arnold's reminiscing about being a little bit older as you read some Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
And a really, really funny episode. So check all that stuff out as we always try to bring you the best content we can. And we've got more stuff coming to the YouTube channel very soon. I've been working on some ideas and to do some things on that. So more video content, podcasting, and lots of fun. And that's all I've got.
Me too.
And Frank, you suck.
Yes, for not being here.
You're like an old man. I mean, how hard is it to sit down and podcast?
I don't know.
You just sit down.
That's all you do. I even offered like donuts and kolaches.
Yeah, you just sit down and you podcast. You don't have to do anything that hard. But until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Just go there and do it.
Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and this is Rebel Radio Podcast.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.